Backseat Producers, episode 135, Shutter Island. Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Tony.
And this is Daryl.
And this is David.
And we are the Backseat Producers.
Yep.
And tonight we're going to talk about...
Shutter Island.
Shutter Island. I saw it last night.
Really?
Did you see it? Last night at 9:30.
Good time.
Probably the last possible time I could have seen it before recording this today. All right, so what do you think? Let's just jump into it. I got nothing
else. I didn't like it.
You're an idiot.
It was painful to watch.
I was disturbed by this movie all the way through. Just when I thought things were going one way, they'd zip off another, and the whole subject matter was kind of creepy.
Well, my answer's kind of long.
Go figure.
As a Scorsese fan, I was very disturbed by the movie. And I didn't know whether I liked it or not when I got out of the movie. But that's most of the reason I like Scorsese, is because when I saw his earlier films, I'd be so disturbed by them, I didn't know if they were good or not, and I'd have to go back and watch them again. So it lives up to basically what he does, and I really liked it.
Yeah, the flawed hero at the end, or the flawed villain. You never know kind of which...
Spoilers!
Baby. Yeah.
By the way, that would be a spoiler, gents.
Okay.
No, it's not.
My thoughts on the movie are... In a lot of places, the spoiler has been given away. But...
No,
but
not really.
There's exactly. More to the spoiler than you think.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's so not the destination on this thing. It is the journey.
It's the journey. Knowing what I knew about it, I was happy that I knew as much as I did going into it, so I could watch it for that. I did like... There was still a mystery to it. I enjoyed the performances. I thought it was very well written. It was a great character study. It was a very disturbing movie. There were parts of it that were just hard to watch. I thought it was a great flick.
I think it really gets back to his true form. I mean, movies like Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, Last Temptation, where you like watch them and you go, what the hell did I just see? And you think about it for 4 or 5 days, and you process it, and then you want to go see it again. That, to me, is what I felt on this movie. And I probably haven't felt that way about one of his movies in many years, you know. I think Gangs in New York was interesting, but I don't necessarily think I wanted to see it again. And the movies he's been more recently successful with have been kind of, I don't know, they're so conclusory at the end, you don't really need to go back and see
them. Yeah, it's kind of mainstream. I mean, more so than what his normal style is.
Right. So,
well, I think one thing that ties into this is one he helped produce, and they helped also sort of, if I read the credits right, he also helped write some.
Yeah, he was.
So he had him and DiCaprio had a big hand in actually producing this thing.
Yeah,
more so than it's just someone come up and say, "Here, shoot this script."
Yeah, and I think the Lehane basically, as far as I understand, was pleased with the way they translated the book or whatever. But, you know, Scorsese says he found himself trapped in a Hitchcock movie. At the same time, he was also trying to... I mean, he's somehow, like, relegated back into his own themes in the movie. So trying to reconcile his own themes and the psychological elements of the film with the Hitchcockian, you know, plot structure, I think was difficult for him, according to him. But I thought it worked out well. I thought he pulled it off ultimately. So
I was gonna say I didn't see any of the creeped out women theme, but then I was like,
really?
Oh wait, yeah, there was a lot of that. Never mind.
Yeah. Uncle Marty's whole weird women thing. Yeah, that was pretty prevalent in here too.
You guys were disturbed by this movie?
Yes.
I was disturbed. Yeah.
This movie was pretty tame on that front.
No.
There's one scene in particular toward the end that was uncomfortable. That was very uncomfortable. And we'd get deep into spoilers with it.
Yeah.
Before we talk about that.
I know
scene.
Why you find it uncomfortable, but
there's that's part of it. But his reaction in that scene is uncomfortable.
It's too
also.
Real.
Right.
It's weird. It's unusual. It's voyeuristic. It's not something you normally see. It's not the way we do things.
All right, mm-hmm.
His reaction was just unnatural in what he saw.
Right.
All right. Well, we can talk about the scene that we're not going to actually
talk
about.
And that big theme that you're talking about is rather than projected onto a specific incident or incidents in the film, like a lot of incidents in his other films, like Last Temptation of Christ, for example, conversations between Jesus and Magdalene. The entire film is about the psychology of a man who worships a person that he then has to deal with in a different way, which is entirely the Madonna whore like complex that exists in a lot of.
We're gonna. I have a feeling we're gonna have a really hard time keeping the spoilers out of this.
Yeah, I don't even understand how we can. I mean, because everything that we talk about, I'm gonna be like, yeah, well, we'll talk about this later.
All right, real quick, the last thing we'll do before we'll do spoilers. Yeah. Performances, because I think we can talk about performances without
Leonardo DiCaprio's accent really annoys me, but other than that, he was fine.
I thought Leonardo DiCaprio should earn awards for this performance.
I thought DiCaprio was really good. I mean, I think DiCaprio has been a good actor, so I don't necessarily think it's any different. I think really the standout performance to me was Michelle
Williams?
Yes.
Is that the woman?
Yes.
It's Dolores.
The blonde.
Dolores.
There's a lot of women in the picture, but yeah, the blonde.
Okay.
And of course, it had Ben Kingsley. And Max von Sydow.
Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah, that guy. I hate Mark Ruffalo.
I liked him in this movie.
Mark Ruffalo annoys me. He annoys me a lot of times. I thought he did a really good job in this movie.
I hate everything you like.
Except the one thing. I mean, for a guy from Seattle, he seems to have an awful deep Brooklyn accent.
Yep.
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah, that's very interesting, isn't it?
Can we get to the spoiler section, please?
All right. Yeah, so we're going to go ahead and go into the spoiler section now because it's kind of hard not to.
We should take a break. It's only been like 5 minutes.
Play elevator music now.
Wah, wah, wah.
All right. Okay, we're back.
What a thick, hearty break.
All right, so we're going to spoil things from here on out.
Yeah, oh my God. All right.
I figured out the spoiler from the trailer. So, at least
it was the most obvious thing.
Yeah, it's
that's the point.
And you know
though.
What? And that's fine. I didn't have a problem with that because if you didn't figure it out within the first half an hour, 45 minutes of the movie, seriously, it was ridiculous.
Well,
the level
that was,
of
that was my problem
and,
with the
and
movie.
I had no problem with that because that's not the point. That's not the twist.
Exactly.
And that's not the big question. At that point, you know. All right. So you know he is someone who's in the facility. Well, we also know that only people who commit violent crimes are in the facility. So my question at that point wasn't so much that we know he's in there. We know he's. He's a...
Whoa, 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 whoa. I don't think we know that he's in there.
Yeah.
Oh.
You don't know that he's out. You know that something is going on.
I think the point of the twist is that you can watch the entire film two different ways, and it works both ways.
No, I don't think so, because there are parts of the performance that are ridiculously obvious.
Yeah, and there are parts that it's not consistent whatsoever.
They're completely winking at the audience, saying, but we know what's going on. We're trying to see if he does.
Yeah,
and that's the point. The point is not that the audience doesn't know. It's that he doesn't know. And you're trying to
figure out when he's going to see it. I would take it one step further. The audience is supposed to know, because the actual twist is that the film actually works the original way when you see it a second time. And I would say that I'm pretty adamant about
it. My problem with it is
I haven't seen it a second time, but...
You don't know because his narrative is so inconsistent that he's unreliable.
Right.
Because Mark Ruffalo dies, and then he appears, and it's like, yeah, okay, great. So it's like, you can't...
Mark Ruffalo didn't die.
I know he didn't die, but you see his corpse.
No. Lying at the bottom of the hill.
Yeah, you do.
No. Well, you see something down there. When he gets down there, you see a white rock.
At that point, though, they have been giving him aspirin. He's been smoking their cigarettes. He also has been going through pretty serious self-delusional events, which could be or not be drug-triggered.
I totally agree, which is why I don't think you can say, well, you definitely know in the first 15 minutes, because you don't, because the narrative itself is unreliable.
The point... There is a scene when he goes into the board meeting, and Ben Kingsley's looking at him, and he goes, who is 67? And they're talking, and they give specific numbers. They give, there's 24 in C, and there's 42 across A and B. And he figures it out. And Ben Kingsley's looking at him, and he gets right up in his face, and he gets really wide-eyed. He goes, yeah, yeah. Like, come on, you can do it. It wasn't that far toward the end of the movie.
It was pretty far towards the end of the movie.
Well, I want to just put in some here. When I was watching this, initially, I was beginning to think, okay, he's having all the nightmares and dreams because of the war trauma, and that's where all this is coming from. And I was kind of led on to that okay, this is just post-traumatic stress that he's suffering from. He's seen that his wife's died. He's gone through liberating Dachau. And he's seen all this stuff. He's done all this stuff. And this stuff is just now coming, bubbling to the surface because of this trip, for whatever reason. And then it starts getting into all the paranoid Cold War stuff. And that takes you off in another direction. And that sort of leads you around that, yeah, okay, you're half convinced. Okay, now it's no longer post-traumatic stress he's got. He's being mind-controlled.
Really? Because I never got any of that. Well, I got that it was all his delusion.
They pretty much
no,
say...
No, I didn't figure that out. I didn't figure out the whole delusion thing until the very end. I was getting really confused towards this.
Oh, wow. Because the whole time watching it, I figured exactly what was going on. And you could pretty much see how everything played out.
Well, I think about halfway through...
The plan itself was crazy, so why would you even assume that was happening?
Well,
I did not assume that it was an elaborate role play. Not at first. But there were clues all throughout that
he was a prisoner. Which you don't put together till the last second.
But there are also clues that are the complete opposite.
I think there are pretty... I think the biggest clue for me was when...
The thing is, everything that appeared to be a red herring was actually the truth.
I know. But he's also going crazy.
So. But I think it also goes the other way.
What other way?
I think that it's very possible that he was a cop, and they enticed him into that trap, and that every step of the way they convinced him that he was crazy, and by the end he was. And then they performed the transorbital lobotomy on him, and they wiped him out. I think the whole point of the film is that you don't know which way it goes.
I thought it was very clear by the end. Well, you see, and that's the way I watched the movie. The way I watched the movie, my estimation was, from the minute we see him on the boat, we're in the midst of the role play. He is really on the boat, because the first time we see him yakking on the boat, he's in a room with shackles. Okay, the only reasonable explanation was is he's been let loose in this room. He comes out, where are my cigarettes? Well, the prisoner's not going to have cigarettes.
Well, that's true.
And from that point on, everything leads to the explanation that this is all an elaborate role play. The woman he sees in the garden who's shushing, she's not shushing him. She has been told to be quiet. So she's letting that was the cue. That was one of the cues.
I think that can be taken a couple of different ways.
I
think the whole point of the movie is that if you watch it, each flashpoint in which you're supposed to glean certain information, it can be taken two ways.
I agree with that. Although
maybe I think maybe I just jumped ahead. And see, and that's I think that's just my interpretation
of the
movie.
Cool, though,
I think you come to a conclusion and then you find the evidence to support your conclusion.
And it works.
Because you can take it either way.
But the thing is, I think, and maybe this is just the fact that I'm whatever, got
unbiased.
I got a Jones for the director, so I think he's like God. But I mean, here's the thing. He wants people to figure out what the twist is in advance. Because the real point of the movie is that after it happens, you get out of the theater and you think about it, and you go back through each point in which evidence can be taken in two ways, and you go, wait a second. That's what they tell you is the flip. But in reality,
it's possible
that they put him in that situation, enticed him into that situation, changed his mind, and then all of a sudden they can get rid of him.
I disagree because of the last 3 minutes of the movie.
What happens in the last 3 minutes again?
The last 3 minutes
is where they're talking.
They're talking on the stairs.
He says,
Chuck, you know, we got to get out of here. We have to go. They're trying to keep us here. There's stuff going on.
Okay.
And his doctor, Chuck, turns to the other doctors and shakes his head. Then he turns back, and DiCaprio pretty much says, "Hey, I win. F you." I mean, in not so many words, he says, "You know, it's you have to wonder if it's better to live as a monster or die as a hero."
Now, I took that a lot differently.
And see, my estimation of the way the movie plays out is that he really was nuts through the course of the movie. They were really trying to help him. In the climax, in the lighthouse, he comes to a grand revelation. They finally break the fourth wall for him. They let him see the other side. They give him a logical proof that his brain can't fabricate its way out of, which he has been doing the whole time. Then he wakes up and he's like, "Yeah, I'm cured. I understand what happened. This is all good. I can get out of here."
Now let me give you the counter to all that.
I killed my wife.
But then he realizes now that he's not crazy. He realizes that the reason he went crazy in the first place was because of his overwhelming guilt that he still has, that he still hasn't dealt with. So at that point, he's just going to flush it all down the toilet and hit the reset button with the transorbital lobotomy.
I'm not saying that you're wrong. All I'm saying is that it's equally 50% that it could have been the exact opposite. For example, if Chuck's a mole, then he's doing both things. He's notifying the doctor, and at the same time, he's reinserting himself into the role.
But at that point, what would it have mattered?
What would it have mattered?
Why would they have tried to turn him at that point?
Why would they have tried to turn him? Because what they don't want to do is take the most dangerous man on the island and give him an opportunity to break free and tell the truth about Shutter Island to the rest of the country, if he really is a detective, as he says he is, which we, in my opinion, do not know.
I actually think the movie works both ways. I think that the argument that it's an elaborate role play is actually weaker because of the scene with the woman in the cave.
The scene with the woman.
Where the hell did that woman come from?
Could have either been real or a complete hallucination, and that's the entire point.
Actually, this brings me to one of the things I enjoyed about the movie is that the movie is shot intentionally to make you feel uncomfortable at every turn.
Yeah.
That scene in the cave was painful to watch because the camera is just hovering at the top of that fire.
Yeah.
And I'm like, please move the goddamn camera.
Yeah,
the music is all awkwardly paced and inserted at weird times. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, come on!
And the dream sequence piece, the Max Richter piece with all the with the violins, to me is just... It's interesting to me that they cue it up during the George Noyce scene, where George Noyce comes back into contact with DiCaprio, and they're having this conversation, and Noyce is basically saying, you've got to figure it out, man. You've got to get outside of your own head, which, again, could be taken two different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing that sequence because in every other part of the movie, it's in a dream sequence, and that's the only scene in which it's actually in the real... So it gives you like a...
Or is it? That's what this movie is. Because everything you say, I'm just going to say, or is it? And then you don't have an argument.
But isn't that the entire point of that lady's conversation in the cave?
That's or
the
is it?
That's the Kafka-esque genius of calling somebody crazy, is that everything you say reinforces the idea that you're crazy, even if it's sane. And I think that was kind of the central idea in the film. But.
And see, for me, it seemed a lot more straightforward than that because of everything that happened and everything that was said along the way. That everywhere, at every step of the line, every person that he encountered was an actor in the role play. Every person he interviewed in the interrogations.
Sure.
Those were staged interrogations. They felt like staged interrogations.
But see,
he even called them out as staged interrogations. Everything they said was feeding his reality so that they could try to break through to his reality.
And I don't think you can dispute any of that. But I think you can watch the entire film and say that he was a detective and that they got him. I mean, I think you can watch the entire film...
Well, he was a detective. That was never disputed.
But I mean that he was a detective when he went to the island.
He wasn't a current patient when he showed
up. Right, exactly. It can be taken entirely both ways.
So then what about the children?
What about the children?
Are those just implanted memories then?
No, the children.
No, I think that happened.
But see that breaks
your supposition.
Let me throw my two cents in here. This is a man who essentially has seen too much and done too much and is just basically shut down. And in the end he doesn't want memories anymore. He just wants to quit living. And the only way he can get any relief from the dreams, the nightmares, and the incessant guilt is to basically just have his brain destroyed. I mean, he just wants to be a zombie, and he realizes that. Otherwise, he's going to keep replaying this over and over and over again.
I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think your problem is that he ends up killing his wife, and that breaks his theory that he was a detective the entire time.
Right.
But if you look at it in Deuce's way, he doesn't ever say how his wife was killed.
Right.
So you don't know how
she
died.
He has an idea
his
head after a certain point.
She died from smoke inhalation in the fire.
No, she was shot by him in the stomach.
That's not what he says.
But that's the point at which he supposedly, quote, admits that he had already been through a serious re-engineering by the island.
So you are
supposedly
saying then...
Well, there was one dream sequence in there where... The first dream sequence with his deceased wife, where they're standing in the apartment, and he's holding her with his arms around her, and she starts bleeding from the stomach.
She's soaking wet.
But she's soaking wet with blood coming from her stomach. And she keeps saying, you've got to let me go.
Mm-hmm.
And all through the movie, it's you've got to let me go. And he just can't.
Or does it?
But the thing is, every time we see her, she's always covered in blood.
Yeah.
And she's always the main part of it is around her torso. So
except for someone who died for the time, but except for the time that we saw her from behind, when he saw her from behind, and mm-hmm. she was singed,
right, and she crumbled her back. into ash,
right,
yeah. So the point is that sequence happens prior to him ingesting anything on the island, and then slowly.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it does.
He takes the aspirin. That's the first
thing he does. Okay, no, you're right. He does take the aspirin.
He did take the aspirin.
The first thing he does when he enters Ben Kingsley's office is take the aspirin.
Well, then it still stays the same because there's no point at which he has a fantasy about that woman being shot or having blood
in his torso unmedicated.
Prior to being medicated. Exactly. So I'm not saying it's one way or the other. I'm saying the whole point of the movie is that it's both.
You're both.
I am both.
Well,
except what they were giving him really was just aspirin. It wasn't. They weren't medicating him. They weren't medicating him at that point.
How
because
you know
he was
that,
going though? Through withdrawal later.
He was going through withdrawal though for different reasons. He was going through withdrawal because he didn't have any cigarettes.
The withdrawal he was going through had nothing to do with cigarettes.
No, he was going through withdrawal because he had been gone for so long and they couldn't have an opportunity to dose him again.
Yeah, but that withdrawal would have only been hours, not the days that would have been necessary for him to...
Not necessarily. We don't know the effect of the drugs.
Depends on medicine.
I mean, sometimes the effects will wear off pretty quick, depending on if you're not built up a tolerance.
But it was Thorazine, right?
No, it was another drug that they mentioned was not Thorazine. That's one he mentioned.
It's Wienerzine.
It's one that Ben Kingsley mentioned that he was not a fan of the pharmacological school, and all these new drugs had come onto the market. Which they were just beginning to really try.
I don't know. Looking at it Deuce's way, my annoyances with the movie are difficult to pinpoint now because anything I say, or was it? So
well, that's, I think, the whole idea of the movie.
See,
I know
it's Allegia
in total, doubt.
So there's really, I mean...
The audience itself begins to doubt doubt what it has seen.
So basically the question becomes, well, which do you think happened? Because you can support either with enough evidence that...
I don't think you're supposed to choose, though.
I choose.
I chose because for me, there's only one that makes sense.
You can choose.
I chose unconsciously.
For me, there's only one that makes sense.
Okay. And that's okay, but I don't think...
But you think I'm wrong.
No, I think it's equitable. I think it's completely one way or the other. I mean,
I think you can pick
if you're
going to
say, okay, punch through my argument, I can't. Because that's the whole way the film was structured. You're supposed to be able to see it both ways.
Except thinking about it, I still can't see it the other way. And that's just it. I can't see it the other way.
You know what Shutter Island...
Now you're wrong.
You know what Shutter Island is an anagram for?
No.
Daniel's Truths.
Really?
Yes. So, which one is the truth?
Have you read the book?
No.
Okay.
No, I picked that up off the internet.
Off the tubes.
Thank you, internet.
So you don't just randomly try and make anagrams of every movie?
No.
That movie you should have, though.
Bob Dylan's album Modern Times is an anagram for Means Timrod, which I thought was pretty clever, since Henry Timrod's poetry ends up in, like, most of the album.
I don't know who these people are.
Okay. So, I don't know. I think that's the point.
I dig that. Good talk, guys.
All right, well, this ended up being a lot shorter than I thought.
Wow.
I'm not satisfied.
Well, that's all right.
I think that's the point of the movie.
Carry on, my friend.
I'm not satisfied because I don't understand the point. I don't understand your point. And that's disturbing to me.
It's like this. Let's suppose in The Sixth Sense... Instead of, all right, spoiler everyone, Bruce Willis is actually a dead guy.
We've talked about that movie before.
We find out that...
Everyone is expected to have listened to every episode prior to this one.
It's completely equally possible that he could have been alive the entire time. Even though the film wouldn't hold that up because it's obviously designed for the twist.
Well,
In this case, it's
designed for the twist as soon as he finds out. But up until that point, it still works both ways.
True.
Up until the point where you actually see the gunshot.
Though there is confusion. There are confusing scenes.
Confusing scenes is one thing.
Right.
Because that can just be misdirection.
Right.
I mean, looking at a scene that's confusing isn't inclusive of anything. So,
like, see, in my mind with this movie, there were no red herrings. The things that would normally be considered red herrings in the film were all truths that he was giving us, just flat out giving us. And
which
most people,
you think he's crazy?
I'm talking about Scorsese.
Oh.
That,
but you think he's crazy?
Maybe.
Or is he?
Mostly.
Mostly.
No, I think I mean, that's,
you don't think at the end where he actually spells out, he says, "I wonder whether it's better to live as a monster or die a good man." He's not actually telling the audience that the dichotomy is that it's very possible that he's dying a good man, or it's equally possible that he's been living as a monster.
No, I think he's, at that point, I think he's lying to himself and letting himself die as a good man.
This gets back into the Watchmen thing, where you think the characters lie to themselves.
Rorschach is a liar, and that is his hypocrite. That is why he's a hypocrite.
They're all hypocrites.
They
That's
are.
The point.
They're all flawed. And Rorschach's major flaw is that he's a hypocrite. Anyway.
I'm just teasing.
And Rorschach was in this movie.
Andy's a brutal murderer, but
yeah,
I mean, mostly the hypocrite thing.
Mostly the hypocrite's the problem. Being that he's a brutal murderer doesn't matter because he's being truthful about it.
I don't ever remember him saying, "God bless life."
I am truthfully killing you. It is true that you are dead when I am done with you.
Which I gotta say, fine performance from him. I don't know his name in this movie.
Jackie Earl Haley.
Osmond, something like that. Haley
Jackie
something?
Earl Haley or something.
Jackie Earl Haley.
Yeah, he's good in this movie. He's only got one scene, but he's great.
He's great. He's creepy.
He's crazy looking. Yeah.
He looks like he's been seriously messed up, which is appropriate for the scene that he's in. That, and we were talking about this earlier. The guy who, what's his name? Elias
Koteas,
who played, what's his name?
Andrew Latus.
Latus. Who plays Latus, who we eventually find out is supposed to be, depending on whose version of the story you believe,
just George Noyes.
Yeah. Latus, when we saw him, I know when I saw him in the trailer, I thought that was De Niro.
Me too.
Because it was, you saw this really brief, kind of grizzled face, and he was kind of squinting up at his face a little bit. I thought it was
De
Niro.
I got very excited because I was like, sweet, De Niro and Scorsese. It's been 13 years.
Even when they introduced the scene to the guy, because they only showed him like from behind and at weird angles at first, it's like, is that really De Niro? Is
it? Yeah, it looks like it, but then
he looked like Christopher Maloney, the guy from Law and Order, SVU. Like, no, that's not quite.
This is what you get for knowing too many people, Tony.
Which
I know a lot of people.
So did Scorsese purposely self-reference himself, or did he not?
I think it could be either. Or is it?
I don't care about that. I just thought it was. I just thought he. That was weird because it really did look like, especially in the trailer. I thought that was I would bet they did try to reference that in a trailer.
What do you think about the conversation, the long conversation, between who I'm guessing was pretty much the head guard and DiCaprio
in the car? About violence?
About violence
that was
and
a,
humanity.
That was a weird scene.
That was an awesome. I thought that was like the best scene in the whole movie.
That was a weird scene.
It was a very weird scene.
And that was, I think that scene was more self-referential about Scorsese than about anyone.
Very possibly, in the sense that all of his movies are about
violence,
what that scene talks about.
Yeah, I mean, that scene speaks about violence and the nature of violence.
Right.
And, yeah, it's, I think for that scene, I think that was more Scorsese wanking off about
it was extreme.
The theme of violence than it was a point. There was a point to it in the movie, and I think it was the guard trying to goad him into a fight. He knew that this was a violent prisoner, and he didn't believe in this plan. He thought this plan was stupid.
Well, see, that's another thing where...
Under my theory, he thought this was a stupid plan.
And that works.
And this is a stupid plan. This plan doesn't work. And I'm going to prove it. I'm going to goat this stupid psycho mofo into a fight. I'm going to get him to come after me. To the point, he even gets right up in his face and says, I'm close enough, I can bite your eye.
What would you do?
What would you do if I bite you in the eye? And it's like, and then, that is creepy.
And then he has a response, and then it was basically a violent response, like, in verbally. I mean, he says verbally what he would do to him violently. And then the guy goes, that's the spirit.
Yeah.
And then lets him out.
Yeah.
I thought it was great, you know.
The conversation can't be taken the other way, though. Like, if he's trying to manufacture a reason to institutionalize Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
This guy gave me up. He's crazy.
I think that's what he was trying to do.
I know. So it works both ways.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then we're agreed.
Did you have something to say?
Not really.
Okay.
It's just the girls whispering, passing notes. Do you like me? Yes, no.
Check this box, Daryl. But I mean, like I said, I thought it was a much better film than his past outings. And I don't think he's ever made really a very bad film or anything. I mean, the past movies were great, but...
Well, hell, Departed won him an Oscar.
Well, yeah, but why did it win an Oscar? Did it win an Oscar because it was a consensus picture? Did it win an Oscar because it was as disturbing and on par with his other psychological masterpieces?
I
would say it is not near as close as his other great films, you know. But this one is.
But can the voting body handle those other films and give it an award?
Exactly.
That's a question that can, you know, that you can really throw out too.
Exactly. I thought the fact that, like, you go to Rotten Tomatoes,
mm-hmm.
Shutter Island. It's pretty, I mean, it's basically a good movie, but there's a lot of people who didn't like it. And if you go back into the history of the films, Adam shaking his head.
I agree.
If you go back into the history of films that he's made and you look at the reviews back then, like now they're all consensus, like, oh, this is a great movie. But a lot of people hated Taxi Driver because mm-hmm. it was disturbing. A lot of people hated Raging Bull. They said, unless you want to watch a film about a guy who you can't stand, you know, don't see the movie.
And now every part of it have become cultural icons and are
exactly.
And become almost kind of like parody thousands and thousands of times.
Yeah,
exactly. And we all know exactly what they mean.
When a group of people firebombed a theater because The Last Temptation of Christ was a horrible, horrible film that should not be seen, and the Catholic Church banned it, and all these people came out against it. I mean, that's really the point at which it's probably a great film. But at the time, people say...
Yes, when riots happen, you know you've touched a nerve but see, somewhere.
And see, the point too of that idea is that if this is a shitty movie that nobody's going to see, what's the point in firebombing it?
Right.
You know, let it just go away.
Right.
But this is a Scorsese pick. This is a movie with some big name actors in it and with people who kind of carry some weight on their own. Let alone the fact that, you know, this guy who also made Taxi Driver and Raging Bull and is behind this movie.
And a lot of credit goes to DiCaprio for that, because it's very possible. I think Scorsese said when he made Gangs in New York, I've made every film I want to make, so if I never make another film, it'd be okay. And it's probably the only reason that DiCaprio has such box office pull that Scorsese's fortunes have changed. Because it's very possible.
I think Scorsese has found a muse in DiCaprio.
Yeah,
I really do. I think he's making movies for DiCaprio's ability. Because I think this movie stands or falls on the performance of Daniel/Andrew.
Right.
And his performance was incredible.
Yeah, because it was very good.
Because he believed, I mean, you know, under my view of the movie, he believed everything he was going through.
I thought it was interesting that he kept slipping in and out of his Boston accent. Because...
Yeah, that was annoying.
I didn't notice that.
Because at first I thought, this is pretty weak. He keeps slipping out of his accent. But then I realized, I was like, well, DiCaprio can do a Boston accent. He did in The Departed. So why is he slipping out of his accent? That's entirely to support the theory that he's not from Boston at all, that he's right. a patient in the facility, which I thought was a great bit of acting, you know.
Yeah.
So.
All right, I have a question, just because when I saw the movie last night, I had the misfortune of not seeing it in a digital theater, which Ooh. Bugs the shit out of me. So, there was a couple scenes that looked to be very weirdly edited. Like, they had jumps in the action. I'm trying to think of one of them. There's at one point where he goes into a room, like, you see him approaching the door, and the next thing you see is he's in the room.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if it was it's the way it you. Was edited, it's, or it's, well, it's I didn't know if it was that, you know, I'm watching it non-digital, and if there's a break in the film, they have to cut that section out. So I wasn't sure if it was that, or if it was that was really the
no,
way
that was the way
edited.
They did it. I'm pretty sure
it was edited to make you feel uncomfortable,
right?
Because yeah. you expected something, and then it just wasn't there.
Yeah.
What
the
about
transitions were weird.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
that was I thought harsh. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, there. Thelma I mean, Studemacher has been his editor since Raging Bull or whatever.
Sure. And, you know that answer better than I do.
Well, basically,
that's a name.
In,
yes.
I agree that could be the name of a person.
That is a person.
In Raging Bull, maybe. they cut it to feel like a documentary where it just be
right.
like these rough cuts and things that wouldn't make a lot of sense. In Goodfellas, they actually tried to do that and make it work like a narrative. Like, it's not a documentary, but it's part of the narrative. So, you intersplice scenes that were disconnected from the previous scene you saw, but you can fill in the gaps with your mind as to what
well,
had actually occurred.
And there's a sequence towards the end of Goodfellas also that's very frenetic and is edited in a very frenetic way. But he's also whacked out on coke at the time.
Right, exactly.
So, there's a very definite reason for
right.
the editorial style at that point.
Yeah. So, I mean, it applies here, too. I mean, it's the same. The guy's supposedly maybe whacked, and so, mm-hmm. you know.
Did you have some? You look like you had information. You were
nope.
browsing.
I was just looking at it, the film editor's credits there.
Okay. Was it?
Is it Schoonmaker?
I didn't really find them. I'm trying to look at them here on IDB, and didn't see them in there. So it must be they're buried down deep in the data here.
All right, so earlier on we mentioned the scene that was really disturbing.
Yes.
Okay. Now for me, the scene that I'm talking about is probably the same one you are. It's the scene when he goes back to the boathouse or whatever, the lake house.
His house.
His house
in the
lake.
In the fantasy slash flashback.
Yeah.
It was very disturbing.
That whole sequence was really disturbing.
Because up until that point, the fantasies slash dreams he's experiencing are disturbing, but since they're happening in dreams, you feel that there's some other kind of context for them, you know, in terms of how children are being treated. And then when you see the actual flashback slash dream
mm-hmm.
where his children are actually killed, if you believe that it's an actual flashback, it's very, very disturbing.
Yeah.
And when he has to lay them out, I mean, what I think is interesting about the sequence is it actually, in a lot of ways, is very respectful. It's not a voyeuristic presentation of the event.
Mm-mm.
So it's not like a Saw movie where you're just like absorbing this.
And see, I think
in a
different semantic way, I think is very voyeuristic because we're watching someone process grief.
Yeah,
and it's in a way that you normally don't see someone at this point in a film. In a traditional film would have done something like he sees the bodies, he picks her up out of the water. And that's the end of the sequence.
But I thought it was very true to how a person would respond. Like, if I was the father of some kids and that had happened, I would immediately try to save one of them. And then if I couldn't save them, I would gather them all together and I would at least try to, you know, put them on the ground and present them in a dignified way.
Right.
And so it and seemed to me to have dignity, even
and at that
though
point,
it wasn't.
At that point, you're talking about someone who's going through a ridiculous amount of immediate grief. There's no reference that anyone can have for that.
Right.
Even someone who's had children die wouldn't have any reference for that grief because
right.
it's very personal at that point. But I thought it was very well done.
Well,
for how it was done,
well
it was.
I think
it was
if they would have shown her drowning him, drowning the kids, which is why I think he's a great director. If he would have went that far, it would have destroyed the audience.
It would have cheapened the
exactly.
the moment.
So I mean, right, the sure. idea that he knows what works and doesn't work in a movie, I think is
well, the,
is evident there.
It had already been the killing's already been described, so your mind's going to fill in all
right.
the harder details.
Right
now, when it's finally presented to us, we know what happened.
Right,
and that yeah, I was about to say that part doesn't matter.
Yeah,
because it that's not the point of the revelation.
Exactly.
But I think a lesser director might have
gone there.
Yeah,
and at that point, it would have cheapened the scene.
Yeah,
because it would have just been about the saw.
And also, the point of view of the story is from Leonardo DiCaprio. He wasn't there when she
exactly
drowned.
Exactly.
Which you made me start paying attention to from Taxi Driver.
All right, so I have a question for you, because you didn't like the movie.
It's true.
Did you not like it because it was about a crazy person?
No.
Or because it was shot like it was about a crazy person?
No.
I don't understand why you didn't like it.
I didn't like it because, so when we talked about, what the hell did we talk about last week? The Timothy Olyphant movie?
Yeah.
Perfect Getaway. I liked piecing it together. I don't like, because the narrative, it's misdirecting, but it's not lying to me.
Okay.
I dislike when the narrative lies to me.
And you felt lied to with this?
Yeah. I think when you see Mark Ruffalo, the scene is not, it's not shot in a way that you can misinterpret the rock as a body. It's clearly a body when you're looking down at it. And then he gets closer and he's like, oh, it's just a white rock. No, when we looked at it up above, it was a different color and it was a body.
Because I would argue last week, the movie, The Perfect Getaway, doesn't give you enough pieces of the puzzle in advance.
But they don't
lie. And then
lie.
Drops a data dump in the middle and cheats the audience from being able to figure out why. Whereas in this picture, it's very consistent
and
in
see,
that
you
can
I don't think
figure
it lied.
Out why.
I don't think this movie lied at all.
I think this movie lied the entire time.
No,
it was using...
Your
narrator is so inconsistent and unreliable.
But he was
not inconsistent.
Taxi Driver, too.
Not inconsistent,
I mean,
unreliable.
Well, he was inconsistently...
He was not inconsistent.
He was consistently unreliable.
Ugh, that's the same thing.
No, it's not.
Well, then you can't take anything he says as truth.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Well, then how
the
can you make any statements about it at all? None of it could have...
We,
there could
we
be a
are.
Third option that it never happened. He's still sleeping in his bed at home, and his wife is, I don't know, going to blow him to wake him up or something.
I think that's a fair point you can make with any movie, that none of it ever happened.
That is a really whacked out bad dream.
I think it's...
He wakes up and punches her in the face.
Bitch, don't drown my kids. They're fine. They're right over there. I said, don't drown my kids, bitch.
I don't want to make it sound like this film doesn't stand alone, because I think it does, but I think a good allegory to the film is The Taxi Driver, where it's actually talked about in first-person narrative, and he's giving you his story, and you can't believe him, because in the end, he betrays all of his so-called, you know, thoughts about who he is and what he represents. I mean, clearly his third-person actions aren't the same as his first-person
I don't like movies shot in first-person perception. I like movies shot in third-person objectivity.
Okay,
that.
But that doesn't mean it's a bad movie.
I never said it was a bad movie.
Okay.
You just didn't like it.
I said
okay.
I didn't like it.
And that's fine. Excellent. I was just trying to get to the point of why
oh,
you didn't.
Oh, no, it's very well done.
I was just trying to get to the point of why you didn't like it, because if somebody listens to this, they might have the same, you know, might have those same...
I think if somebody listens to this, they've already watched the movie.
Probably.
And so it's too late for me to save
maybe
them
not.
$13.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Or they're listening to it 8 months from now when it's on Instaflix.
Well, that's true.
In which case, they got it for free because they're
save
already paying.
Save them 2.5 hours.
All right, there you go.
I'd still encourage people to see the movie, so that doesn't even matter.
Why are you guys looking at me?
Normally you have more to talk about. It's Scorsese.
Well, I basically have said everything I want to say.
Except for this.
It'll be about 2 years before I get to talk about a new Scorsese movie again. True. So I'm glad we got to talk about
it. Or we could just dig out one of the ones we haven't talked about yet.
We haven't talked about Raging Bull yet.
I thought you guys did.
Probably because I bring it up every episode.
No, we did.
I think we did a full episode.
You and I did talk about that.
We did a full episode of Raging Bull?
Yeah, because we both talked about our favorite
movies.
Time for
another. It's the Raging Bull watch.
Raging Bull. We did Raging Bull and we did North by Northwest.
Raging Bull versus... No, that was Pat Garrett. Remember we did Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid? Because I love that movie.
We did those movies as well.
We did that one too.
They're not mutually exclusive.
Well, we've done a lot of... There's over 130 episodes at this point. We've done a lot of movies. I sometimes have to go back and look at the list myself.
This is only the third Scorsese movie? No, the fourth. Because you've seen Taxi Driver, mm-hmm. Last Temptation, mm-hmm. Color of Money, and
yes.
others.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you've not seen Goodfellas or Raging Bull or any of his other ones. Mm. So
we should do Goodfellas.
As a... From a non-fan perspective, because I think clearly you're divided.
Haven't
on the
I seen
guy
more or, than half of the guy's movies now?
No, he's made like 30 films or something.
Oh, he's just seen the important, the ones that are memorable.
There's more to go.
Last Temptation was really good.
Okay, all right. So
I think it's safe to say per our discussion.
But I think it's safe to say that for the most part, you don't like his films.
That's true. That is true. I'm the anti-Deuce,
and that's fine. I think that's what makes these conversations interesting.
There can't be an anti-deuce without a deuce. So
it's true.
I'm glad you're
here. The negative deuce.
The mirror matter one.
I'll be the one with the British accent.
The dark deuce. Oh, that's something completely different.
The dark deuce. The double D.
Sounds like someone who needs a little more whole grain. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
All right, I gotta go.
So, yeah, I don't have much else to say, but... I think we should do more Scorsese movies. I'm always open to that. He's got like 30 films, so I'm sure.
Aren't
we'll
you not going to be here
at that point? At that point, we can rename the podcast the Scorsese Hour.
Yo, he. Every week, it's I wish Deuce was back. Oh, I wish Deuce was back. You know, when he comes back, it means it's going to be more Scorsese movies. I don't know.
Yeah, if we get into Italian neorealist films, I'm pretty sure you'll want me gone for good.
I don't even know
almost
what that
means.
Come on,
we
haven't even touched Sergio Leone.
Oh my god, I love that guy.
There we go!
His movies.
Yes!
That sounds like a good vacation week.
We could let those two do that.
Yeah.
So, well, I know you like Hitchcock a lot.
I do like Hitchcock.
I don't know, you guys have a particular director that you really dig?
Negative?
Kira Kurosawa.
There we go. We haven't done any Kurosawa movies.
No.
That's the movie.
TCM is doing a whole month of them, so
I would be in for Kurosawa.
That is a good move.
You know what we should do? We should do Seven Samurai and Bug's Life.
Okay, yep.
Because they're
essentially the same
movie.
Okay. They're the same
movie. Well, a lot of movies are the same movie as Seven Samurai.
Yeah, I mean, it's been Magnificent Seven. And
there's a full 23 episode anime series. Call Samurai 7.
I'm
all about that. We should do Seven Samurai for sure. Bug's Life. Yeah, we can do that one too.
Dude, Tuck and
Bug's
Roll.
Life is a good movie.
Yeah.
Tuck and Roll are hilarious.
Tuck and Roll.
Hip.
Yeah, no, we should do some Kurosawa. That would be awesome.
Dennis Leary is Ladybug.
Last night they had Hidden Fortress on. I'd seen that one for a long time.
What's the deal with, there's a film called Kagoshima?
Yes.
Paul Schrader film, is it directed by Kurosawa, but it's written by Paul Schrader?
I don't know. I'd have to go back and look.
Something like, it was at a time when Kurosawa couldn't, like, no one would produce his film. So, like, George Lucas produced it, Paul Schrader helped write the script, and then Kurosawa directed it. It was, like, very late
Sounds
in his career.
Weird.
Maybe I'm wrong. I could be totally wrong
But the thing is, Kurosawa has his own production company, so it's unlikely.
Better
that
chicken for psychotropic drugs.
That would be the case.
And just maybe he just couldn't.
He's drinking
he raised
the beer
the for Ron with no problem. So
okay. Well, maybe
that should have been an easy.
It's my third beer, so it may not even make any sense what I'm talking about right now. So.
Well, at least one thing. He's very iconic, like Scorsese. I mean,
or does it?
Did Kurosawa even exist? I think that's the real question.
Or if he didn't exist, we had to invent him.
Exactly.
We should do a riff track to all 8 hours of the Shogun miniseries.
I would love to go back to the Shogun again.
You read the book?
I have read the book.
The book is fantastic.
The book is awesome.
I make it to about 2 hours into the miniseries, and I'm like, I am out. And it's always the same scene. It's always when he's dancing.
I haven't seen the Shogun miniseries.
We haven't done a full.
Yeah.
We haven't done a full movie in a while. It's been a long time since we've done that. We should do that for Tron.
That's not enough for Tron.
I have a Raging Bull, you know, commentary track. That's not what I thought
you were going to say. You do.
I do.
Do you have it? Do you still?
It's ready to go.
We can still release that anytime you want.
Not what I thought you were
going
to say.
You guys knock yourself out.
I thought it was going to. I have a raging erection.
Whoa!
Well, we're talking about Scorsese, so that might even be possible.
Same thing.
No, we should do some Kurosawa. I think that would be a good move. I can't believe in 130 movies we haven't done a Kurosawa movie. Have we even done a Hitchcock movie?
It's because Tony hates Asians.
Well, we did North by
Northwest. We did North by Northwest.
But,
it's the most iconic film you ever made, so.
North by Northwest? It's my favorite movie.
But we never sat down and, like, it's really period, did an
it is period my favorite movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We did a full North by Northwest?
I think we did.
Yeah, you All did. Right.
All right.
Pretty sure.
It was around the time you did Raging Bull. That's not a joke.
We did Raging Bull, dude. We did Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. I'm right. Almost positive about that.
All right. So let's go ahead and end this one.
Peace out, y'all.
See ya.
Bye.